This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Okay, Place to Be Nation, welcome to the latest reaction show, our third this week. And this one's for NXT TakeOver Respect on the network. And guys, I'm happy y'all are here. Tonight I'm joined by Chris Zellner from Exile on Bad Street. I got Pete and Johnny from the Titans. And I got my good buddy Johnny P, documentary maker of Barbed Wire City. These guys have all been on reaction shows before. You know them well. So let's dive right into the show. Okay, Johnny Sorrow, first match. Finn Balor and Samoa Joe versus Dawson and Wilder. Do they have a name besides the Mechanics?
Well, they don't even have the name Mechanics.
No, I know that's not their name, but I'm just saying that's like what people are calling them.
And they're Dash and Dawson.
Dash and Dawson, okay.
Because it rolls off the tongue, is the Mechanics is the most bland thing I can imagine. So
whatever. I don't know. To me, this is a great match to start off the show. Not a match of the year or anything, but really fun, energetic opener. So what'd you think about it?
I'm not the only one to say it, but I love Das Wunderkind, Finn Balor, coming down. If only he had done the dance. Because that's all that jacket reminds me of. I thought it was a lot of fun. I liked that the story they're telling is the beginning of the story that was going throughout this and is going to continue. Is the tag team partners aren't on the same page deal. Dash and Dawson are on the same page. Pulled off a lot of cool little moves, like the guy tossing his own guy back into the ring so he could get the tag. I always love that spot. And then they fuck up Balor's knee, which is the main story that runs through everything. And he continues to fight. I thought Joe, like especially the last end of the match, I thought Joe showed up as much, the best fire he's shown since he's been in NXT, and I just really loved it. I just want to add that trophy is fucking awesome.
Yeah, we'll talk about that when we talk about the celebration. What about you, Chris?
Yeah, it was a really good showcase for Dash and Dawson. I thought they were really strong in this match. Of course, they've been around the block. With Dawson was Casey McKnight, and Wilder was Steve Walters from Georgia and North Carolina indie scene. They've been teaming together for a while, you know, in different places. So they got good chemistry together. I really liked the work on Balor's leg. Told the good story, like was said. Joe still does not look like he's at 100%, and he's looked like he's lost that step, but he was better here than he was at the last show. And the finish I thought was done really well to set up the finals to further that deal with Balor's leg, and to also tease that, okay, maybe we will get a turn here, that Joe was upset that Balor tagged himself in, but we'll talk about what happened later in that match, but yeah. As far as like openers on the NXT shows, these takeover shows, this might have been the best one.
I don't think I'd argue with that. I think I want to disagree with you about Joe, because I really thought he stepped up. I thought he looked like Joe tonight. I mean, everything just had that extra oomph. I thought he was slamming people like harder.
He's still a tick slower.
I don't know, man. He was beating the shit out of people.
But yeah, he was way better than he was on the Brooklyn show.
Yeah, I feel he felt more motivated tonight than as opposed to looking as good as you guys are saying. I'm more in the Zellner camp on this. I think he felt more motivated to put on a show. I think he worked a little harder than he had been, but I still think he's like a step off or something.
I don't know why you'd be more motivated to work in front of 500 people versus 20,000 or 13,000, but that's just me.
Because he's going to win the Dusty Rhodes title. Tournament. I think that meant a lot to him.
That's fair. I'm still going to disagree with you guys. I thought Joe looked great. Having said that, now Johnny, you're a guy who's seen Joe since ROH. You're a guy who's seen him. Johnny P. Sorry, Johnny Sorrow.
I'm sorry. We both have. I'll just back up.
Yeah. For now,
we were both East Coasters.
Yeah, just for sake of not confusing you, I'm going to go Johnny P. and I'm just going to call you Sorrow, okay?
That works.
That's your name tonight, Sorrow. And so, Johnny, you're a guy who's seen Joe since he came up from ROH as Sorrow. What do you think about his career trajectory? I mean, you know, going from ROH to TNA and now, you know, doing this NXT stuff where he can kind of regain his credibility.
Well, I've said on these shows before, like after the debut and back in August when we did the reaction for the Brooklyn Takeover show, it felt like he retired after, maybe not when he went to TNA, but definitely after, I'd say, like the angle, that angle cage match in, like, I think it was early 08. And then he just, like, unretired when he showed up at NXT. As far as his career trajectory, it's such a bummer, and I'll probably get into this more because, you know, obviously they were in the championship match. I just worry that he missed his window. And he doesn't. I am on the side, unfortunately, as the Joe Homer. I have to say, I'm on the side. I thought he's slow. He's slower. I don't know that he looked better tonight. It would be splitting hairs for me. But overall, he can still go. He's not an embarrassment. In fact, he has some really cool moments. But I don't feel. I really just wish that somehow you could take the Joe from like 04, 05, 06 and just transport him to now, because he would be something special. Now he's good, but he feels like a member of the roster instead of something really special.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, we're never going to get that, and I feel you on that one, man. But let's move on to the next semifinal. We're going to talk more about Joe and Balor coming up, because they did win the match. Now...
Yeah, you guys covered everything I was going to say anyway, so that's cool.
Oh, I'm sorry, Pete. Well, no, think about it. Pete interrupted me earlier, so I thought he got his piece in. So,
you know, no, you pretty much.
He didn't want to wait until I called on him. He just wanted to interrupt.
No, I wanted to go head on with your point.
Oh, no, I was going to let you get your point in, but you got your point in. So let's move on. All right. So we got Rhino and Corbin versus Jordan and Gable. No, I'm just picking on you, Pete. Go. Say your piece, man. What did you think?
I mean, yeah, honestly, you guys did, but for the most part. But I kind of like the structure where it wasn't a total traditional Southern style where they mixed it up a little, where they didn't give us a straight-up shine to start. We got a little heat, and then we got a hot tag, and then we got a cutoff, and then we got some more heat, and then we got another hot tag. So I kind of like that. I don't think it's real fair to Dawson and Wilder to compare him to the Minnesota Wrecking Crew and the Brain Busters. At best, they're going to be like maybe a dirty white boy type team where they have good psychology. But I really don't. I don't know. If it's going to translate on the big screen, big scale for him. But I, as an opener, I'm with you guys. I think it was like the best one we've seen. I actually think the whole undercard was the best NXT undercard we've seen.
Oh well. Don't blow your load in one announcement, but yeah, we're going to get to that too, Pete.
Bad visual.
I will say this though, man. I really enjoyed the heels. I really enjoyed them attacking Balor's leg. I mean, there's one part where like Balor's leg was draped over the rope while he was in the heel corner. And while one guy was distracting the ref, the other guy just kicks his leg. You know, just little things like that add much to the match for me. And then who had the single crab on? I don't know which one's which. Dawson or Dash? Do y'all remember?
Oh, man.
I just know their names. I don't know.
All right. It doesn't matter. When the guy had Balor in the single crab leg, and then Balor gets to the ropes, and he knows he only has 4 seconds, so he just leans back and cranks on it even harder for that last 4 seconds. So I really loved the legwork in this. So, I mean, I was really excited. You know, kind of disappointed they didn't win the match because I was really hyped about it. But, you know, because of the gravity of the situation and the Dusty Rhodes thing, I mean, I have no problems with Finn and Balor, or Finn and Joe going over. Next match, Rhino and Baron Corbin versus Jason Jordan and Chad Gable. Chris Z, what did you think about this semifinal?
I love Chad Gable and Jason Jordan. They are so good. And I was glad to see them get a big spotlight tonight. And this is their first time they've been on the TakeOver show. So they went out there, even though they lost a match, which... I think they should have won, but I understand why they didn't. But they went out there and they definitely made a name for themselves, you know, on the losing end of it. The fans were just off the chain in this match, doing the Gable, chant to Angle, the Angle stuff. Just all the different chants, and they were just so into these two guys, and the stretch run this match was really fun. Chad Gable breaking up the Chaos Theory was really awesome. And then that End of Days that Corbin hit was probably the best one of those he's ever hit. Cause I mean, he took Gable all the way down, brought him all the way back up, dropped him. And, yeah, man, this was a blast. Way better than what I thought it was going to be. So, props to Gable and Jordan, and big things are coming their way in the future.
What about you, Pete? I thought this was the best Baron Corbin's ever looked.
I agree. And a lot of it was probably because he's using his finisher a lot in the match. I thought it was a match that appeals to, like, everybody. Because, like, if you like structure, you got some structure. If you like fireworks, you got that finishing run. I mean, it was something that could really, it's one of those matches that where it could appeal to, like, the spot monkeys. And it could appeal to, like, traditionalists because of the early structure and stuff. And, man, I'm with you, Zellner. I'm not about both of them, but I think Gable for sure is a blue chipper. Jordan, he's probably there too. But, man, Gable for sure is a blue chipper. And this really is the best Corbin's look. Like, I was watching this, and even Corbin and Rhino looked like a team that should be on the roster. And I think it might have been working with these guys because they really had just a really super fun match.
What about you, Sorrow?
Well, Pete, I agree about Chad Gable, but if you watch that NXT 24 special that was awesome at Brooklyn, one of the few shots of Vince backstage is him just looking at Jason Jordan like, yeah. So, you know.
Oh, yeah. by Vince standards, for sure. I mean, Gable is the short guy and Jordan has the body. I understand wrestling, but I'm yeah. not saying, you know, I'm looking at it from the fundamentals in ring.
Oh, no, no, I know. I'm just saying that when I saw that, that's the first thing I thought of. I was like, okay. And I think Jordan's really good. This match was awesome. I had to come to grips with the fact that I just watched a Baron Corbin match that I fucking loved, and I thought he was really good at it. You know, and we all know I've been no fan of the man, and turn me tonight with this performance. You know, don't know, we'll see what comes in the future, but I have nothing but praise for him here. I thought this was a blast. Like you said, Chris, the crowd, it wasn't just the Angle thing. They stole the New Day Save the Tables.
Yes.
Going save the Gable. Save the Gables.
Yeah.
And this is one of those times when smarky, smart-ass crowds work, because it was all still about cheering for that underdog, and he was playing, for a guy whose character so far has been this cocky douchebag, he was playing plucky underdog. It's so amazing. That's what grabbed me. And it grabbed that crowd, too.
Yeah, you're right.
That guy is right so on. Full of fucking charisma that it just carries through no matter what he's doing. So I have all the praise for him as well. And I thought this match was a stone blast. And I understand why. I wonder if they thought that crowd was going to react to Gable and Jordan as positively as they did. Would they have still gone with the spinner who went over?
Well, depending on how the main event went, I think they eventually made the right choice.
Oh, I agree. But I think there was a lot. There was a very organic feeling about how much they were behind Jordan Gable, who thus far are bad guys. They're heels.
Yeah,
they hate Corbin so much. So I mean, anyone you put up against is going to be babies and. And I think these guys are nasty. They're heels, but they're also entertaining heels. So it's really easy to switch them.
Right, but I don't think they're going to be heels for long. These guys are.
I don't think they'll be heels at all.
Yeah, tomorrow night's tapings out of store.
Yeah.
About face.
I agree 100%.
Unless they hook him with the Bob Villains, you know, in a tag title feud, which, you know, that's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
The one thing I want to mention real quick, though, is the one criticism of Baron Corbin I had in this match was I thought sometimes his offense looked a little too light for a guy his size. It didn't look like, you know, we talk about how Joe had that extra oomph in his stuff. Corbin definitely didn't have that extra oomph in some of his stuff.
I don't know, man. I'm not even gonna criticize him in this match. You know, I mean, I thought he looked fine. I couldn't complain about anything he did, really. I actually want to touch on something y'all didn't touch on. What I liked about this match was that it wasn't a carbon copy of the first match, where the first match was kind of that WWE style, the heels control kind of from the outset, and you just wait for the hot tag and the finish. This one had a shine sequence. This was almost a really, like your traditional tags where, you know, Jordan and Gable were hopping in and out, working over Rhino's arm. You know, a lot of limb work in this show, but just working on Rhino's arm. And Rhino could never get the best of these guys. It wasn't until Corbin came in that, you know, the tide turns. And I really like that. Of course, the crowd helped this match a lot. And you already mentioned the stretch run. The beginning, I didn't think there was a lot of substance. I mean, a lot of nice little flowing movement, but not much substance to it. But, man, a great way to finish this match. I think in a vacuum, if this is just a tournament without the Dusty Rhodes name, yeah, you put the two young teams over, right? I mean, really. Because, I mean, I was more excited about the two young teams coming out of these first two matches than I was the quote-unquote veteran teams or the more established teams. Johnny P., what's your take on the booking of this? I mean, like, if you're booking this tournament with these four teams, how do you book it?
I might be jumping ahead just slightly. Well, I mean, like, if you're listening to this, you probably know what happened anyway. I was just kind of weirdly pleasantly surprised with the finish to the title match, which I won't, you know, get too far into. But I don't know, it's tricky. It really depends on what they want to do with Gable and Jordan. And that's something, like, I'm glad you brought this up, because there's this weird thing where I don't know how to feel. Like, am I supposed to, as this type of fan that does, you know, these type of audio shows, am I supposed to be rooting for them to stick together for a while and then break up and feud, or am I rooting for them to run through whatever iteration of a tag team that they do and get moved up to the regular roster because that's a promotion? And I know that the WWE answer would be just shut up and enjoy the ride. Just watch. You know, just be a fan. We don't want to hear you, you know, kind of pontificate on this. But I don't, like, it's weird. Like, you get into, like, a vacuum of overthinking with these kind of guys, because I thought they were going to the finals and they were pulling it out, but I also thought that they were really going to heal it up a lot, and the crowd kind of just nullified that. They're a team where I would be shocked if by the end of the tapings tomorrow night they're not some sort of a tweener or face team in some odd way, and I think Gable, oddly enough, will come out of it as a face.
Okay, so how would you book the tournament?
I don't know. I mean, I would just be able
to the question.
I put it to you, sir.
Well, you got to understand, you know, this was Gable and Jordan's first time on TakeOver. This was Dawson and Wilder's first time on TakeOver.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is their first chance at a big time. So, I don't know. It depends on how you want to go about that.
Yeah, both teams delivered. So.
I want to see them work each other more.
Well, I didn't
got a taste of it on the tapings before the last special, but I want to see these teams work each other.
Yeah, they're teasing the four men a team at the other special, and they've already teased that they don't like each other. So go from there.
Well, I guess I would say that I didn't like the semifinals as far as the pairings go. I guess that's why I was being evasive, because I was like, I feel like you had to have Joe and Balor in the final, but then again, I assumed they were splitting. And I thought that that should have been the final, these two teams. They should have been in separate brackets, but I mean, that's just me and that fantasy booking stuff.
You know, this was a tribute to the Crockett Cup, basically. I mean, it's basically what it was. Mm-hmm. All right, go back and look at the Crockett Cup. Your first one had Magnum T.A. and Ronnie Garvin, not a regular tag team. Your second one had Lex and Tully, not a regular tag team. And your third one had Sting and Luger, not a regular tag team, all in the finals. So the fact that you had one team that was not a regular tag team like Balor and Joe and Corbin and Rhino, who I guess they're not a regular team either, it fits right along with Dusty Rhodes-style tag tournament booking.
But the winners of the first one were the Road Warriors, right?
Yeah, they wouldn't have been.
The second one was Dusty and Nikita.
Right.
Who won the third one? 88.
Sting and Luger.
Sting and Luger.
Sting and Luger.
Okay.
But you know what? That first one, that's why they had to put that Dusty Flair match in that show that no one cared about to get Dusty out of America's team, because you're going to have America's team versus the Road Warriors in this tournament. One of them is going to have to lose, and I don't think Dusty wanted America's team to be losing. So I got it, baby. I'll be in the World Championship match, and we'll put in Ronnie Garvin. Then the Road Warriors can win, baby.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's probably something like that probably went down, too. That's probably exactly how that conversation went. Well, we'll talk more about these tag teams when we get to the finals. Let's move on. So, Pete, you're a guy who likes Japanese wrestling, and so this Asuka debuts, you know, tribute to Lioness Asuka. I really like that the announcers kind of played that up. You know, they didn't run from the Crush Girls. And so it was Asuka versus Dana Brooke. What'd you think about this one?
What a debut. Another great debut on NXT. I didn't think UHA Nation had a good one. But you know, we saw Owens have a great one, and here's another one just like it. And it was, I mean, it was competitive in a way, but it was all about Asuka, and she was just fantastic. I mean, she showed charisma. She showed stiff work. She showed incredible work. She showed a wide variety of offense. Everything you really want out of, like, a kid. She comes across like this kick-ass babyface who had it all. I felt bad for Dana in a way because she's still pretty green, and her stuff didn't look nearly as deadly as Asuka's. And so it kind of hurt a little bit, but I mean, but that's not the point. The point was to get her over, and we did with in style. It was.
Hold on, Pete. I'm going to interrupt you now. I actually think that's the point. Is that, you know, Dana Brooke is a girl in there with a woman. You know what I mean? In the sense that, oh, you're going to hit me with that. Well, let me respond with this.
But a very strong girl.
You know what?
That's the only way she could hold her own at all was with strength.
Continue, Pete.
Yeah, I mean, other than that, I mean, it was just a great debut, and I mean, now you kind of like you're wondering where you're going to go with her because her debut was so strong.
Oh, I know, but I'll wait till I get my turn.
I'm sorry.
This is like deadly strong. Like she looked like the toughest person in the damn territory.
Johnny P.
Sorry, I had to take myself off mute. I'm here. I was doing the right thing, and I got caught. I really liked this. I liked it because it wasn't really near falls. It didn't need to go long. It was kind of switched. I liked is it Asuka, by the way? Because I keep saying Askew, and I know that's wrong. Asuka's entrance is perfect to me because it's not overdone. It's the mask. She comes out. She removes the mask. The one thing that's annoyed me in the past couple of years about WWE is people doing poses like it's a video game where they come out and they have the thing that they always do almost like a robot. And Dana Brooks was like almost like a SNL parody of that when she first because it was like 18 different things. And then they had Emma. And then they had Emma, and Emma's got like five things that she does with the 18 things, and it's just so over the top at this point. So I was just like, dude, just let Asuka just do her thing. I feel bad for Brooks. Here's the thing. I thought this was a brilliant debut for Asuka. I really like what she showed. I like the flying armbar thing. The strikes were cool. And it was the perfect length for me. It didn't overstay. Poor Brooks is like, people talk about a character babyface and they kind of overuse that and use it in this macro way. I do think Brooks fits into like the perfect character heel character role. And it's unfortunate because I don't ever see, I hope I eat my words, but I don't ever see her really being a babyface. She's like the perfect character of a heel. She works perfectly in these matches. She was perfect for Asuka. The problem is, she just keeps losing. She's actually improving a lot. I mean, she was really bad when she came in. And I think that's why she got a lot of heat when you look to her against, like, the Four Horsewomen. And now she's improving, and I almost feel like they're slowly kind of killing her. I just hope she can kind of reclaim that heat. This is a nice little match, man. This is cool.
Hey, I'll tell you what. I'm going to give Brooke props, man. She sold the hell out of, like, her neck, like, you know, from those whiplash spots. I mean, she was selling. I don't know if she was really legitimately,
yeah,
like,
showing
up.
She was selling. That looked like it hurt.
All right. Johnny P., what'd you think about this? I mean, Johnny Sorrow. Man, I am going to kill myself tonight before the end of the show.
You're supposed to call me Sorrow. That was your rule.
I know. What a
good thing you broke your own rule.
See, I break all the rules, even my own.
Oh! Call Big Julie.
I'm just going to add this, and I'm sorry, Pete, I interrupted you, so I'm going to keep it short. I wrote down the exact same thing you did, Johnny Pay, about the posing of Emma and Dana, and that it's so what you hate, and they're doing it perfectly to make you hate it. I agree with you 100%. It was fantastic. I loved Asuka's entrance as well, but also what they did on the screens with the masks and stuff. That looked huge. And added to this debut. And I like to think at the end when she comes out and gets in Emma's face. And Emma just like backs down, just turns her head. What a debut. I mean, that's a fucking debut of a star right there. And the match was a lot of fun. And I agree that I think Dana's getting really pretty good. And she should just stay a heel. Like you say, she's never going to be a babyface. She's going to be a heel forever.
Yeah, one thing about Asuka, and she actually went on Twitter and said that her name is not anything to do with Lioness Asuka, which was funny because Rich Brennan said that on commentary. So that was a little side point. But if you ever have seen her as Kana in Japan, her best work were in these 10-minute and less matches. So in the WWE where they, you know, most of your Divas matches are less than 10 minutes, although they're trying to change that now, she's going to fit right in with it. And she does everything with a purpose on offense. Her character development is great. The fans were hyped up for her. She was phenomenal here. And the thing about Dana Brooke is Dana has really gotten better, like everybody said. And she carries herself well, and she's really great in her gimmick. And Johnny P, she should never be a babyface. She should always be a heel. And that was the problem with, like, Beth Phoenix. Whenever they turned her babyface, it never really was believable because she was meant to be a heel. And Dana Brooke is like Beth Phoenix Jr. She's like Beth Phoenix crossed with Natalya in a lot of ways. And, Dana shouldn't have a job this quickly to Asuka. Maybe it should have been Emma in this match, but, it definitely worked. And as when I was talking about who I thought Asuka would go next, I got a bad feeling that they're going to probably hook her up with Eva Marie in the future. That's going to be a test to see how good she is.
Or it's going to be this whole like Triple H, well, I want to appeal to the to our crowd, so I'm gonna show Asuka murder her in the middle of the ring.
Run her out of the damn territory! Holy Christ!
I just got a feeling about it, so we'll see.
I'll tell you what, man.
I thought you had a good one coming up, man. Jeez.
Eva Marie's not gonna be at the tapings because the Total Divas crew is in Paris right now, so she's not around. But so we'll see how the tapings go tomorrow night and see who they program her with. But it's coming down the road. It's coming.
I'll tell you what, man. I loved Asuka's arm work in this. I mean, every counter was on that arm, and just finally being able to hook in that chicken wing. I mean, so far, man, this is my kind of wrestling. We're talking about working that leg in the first match, the babyface tag work on the Rhino's arm, Asuka attacking that arm like it's a freaking chicken wing. Just, man, I am all over this show right now. Just and it doesn't slow down, as we're about to see with the next match, Johnny P. Apollo Crews versus Tyler Breeze. I thought Crews had a much better match here than on the show, and I want to hear your thoughts, and I'll give my thoughts later.
Well, I think we can confirm now, after the second events match, so to speak, that they are, there was some question after the Brooklyn show, like, oh, what are they doing? I thought they were going to bring him in big with the debut, and they probably should have. That was probably still a misstep. But I definitely don't think he's going to portray anything near a Goldberg-ish character. If anybody was thinking that, that's just off the table.
Who thought he was going to be Goldberg?
No.
I've heard people say that they should push him like that, but I mean, that's, to me, that's a little crazy. He's deceptively undersized.
Maybe Goldberg.
Well, I don't think that would be a recipe for success either. But the weird thing about this match is very good. Once again, Breeze like pulled a lot out of the guy. I'm not the biggest fan of Cruz's. I think it's athletically impressive, but I'm glad that they didn't use that that backflip as the finish. And he did something a little different with that modified powerbomb. I thought that was cool. It was really competitive. It was again. Felt like a little switch in just a tweak in match style and pace. The one thing, though, that I don't know that it worries me, but I came out of this match going like, well, I want to watch more Tyler Breeze than I do Crews. I thought that he made Crews look really good, and
yes,
really was the glue in this match. And not to say that Crews isn't talented or anything, but Breeze came across as a star here.
Okay, I'm with you, man. Now, Pete, I just mentioned the leg work in the first tag match, the arm work in the last match. This one, Breeze working over Cruz's lower back and back area. I mean, dude, this is like, what is this? A throwback to the 80s? What's going on?
I know.
I'm
loving it. And it shows, you can all have the basic same psychology in each match, but it's different because you're working a different part. So therefore, it's different and interesting. And I was loving every single thing of this. I thought, I love the back work. I thought Crews selling out his little backflip, I thought that was nice off the roll off the off his back. I wasn't expecting. I thought he was going to shit can it, and Crews did it. I was real impressed with that. I really dug those false finishes on the counter of Crews's backflip finish, and I gotta say, Tyler, and I liked how they mentioned Tyler Breeze on, I think it might be his only victory on one of these specials, that he's never got his title shot. He's obviously the NXT's Christian, because he works his ass off and puts over everybody and has good matches with everybody on the roster.
What'd you think there, Chris Z?
Yeah, Tyler Breeze, he needs to go up to the main roster, and it should have been up in the main roster. He's in a spot now where, what can you do? You know, what else can you do with him there? There's really nothing else.
Well, Chris, my concern about him going to the main roster is right now, man, the way they're bringing these guys in, with the exception of Owens, and even he's cooled down a lot from being really hot earlier on. I don't know. I don't know if I want to see these guys on the main roster right now. That's the sad part.
Oh, I agree with you, but, you know, it's like he's jobbed on every special. He beat Liger, but, I mean, he's jobbed on every special. He's become.
No, he didn't beat Liger. He lost to Liger.
That's right. That's right. Yeah,
he beat Sami Zayn or something like last year, and was supposedly the number one contender. But then the feud was with them. Then they went with Zayn and I don't even know. They went with Zayn. That's and right. Yeah, okay.
That's right. Yeah, and I mean, he just, I don't know. He's been there too long.
I agree, but I mean, I'd rather him have kick-ass 10-minute, 15-minute matches in NXT and job every time than go up to the main roster and job to the Big Show in 3 seconds. You know what I mean?
I definitely understand that, and I agree. But, I mean, there's something that they need to do something. Something with him. Somewhere, somehow, some way, because he's too good to just be in this position. Now, Cruz, interesting psychology in this match, and our buddy Dylan brought this up on Twitter, and I thought it made a ton of sense that he thought that the reason why this match was laid out like it was they were, I guess, trying to see if Apollo had the, wherewithal to have the babyface psychology to go win these longer matches, to have the selling and all this other stuff to see if he's ready to become that top babyface that they, that they want in NXT. And I thought he did good here.
He did great. I thought his selling of the back was great.
Yeah, totally. And I thought the finish was awesome because he sold the back, and all he did was he just hit one kill shot, and that was it. That was the final move. And that was a cool ass looking power bomb. It's way better than the standing moonsault finish.
Yeah.
So yeah, this was another strong match on this show. And yeah, you it's talked about how the limb work was using all the matches and stuff. You look at who the guys are that are working behind the scenes: Smiley, Brookside, Regal, Triple H. All these guys that they believe in that type of stuff. So of course you're going to have it in these types of matches. So props to them.
Yeah, I'm with you, Johnny Saw.
Well, I think what they're doing with Breeze, and it's been hinted well, and they do this shit well in NXT, is they're going to play on the fact that he can't win on the big one. He wins on TV against the jobber guys they bring in at NXT. And some of them are considered somewhat competitive, but he definitely beats them. They're playing up on that. This match started with him being miserable backstage and Cruz getting in his face, being a heel, actually, but besides that. I think if the announcers mentioned he never got his title shot, I think that's going to play into. I think they're going to try to do something where he's going to take it all seriously now, which would be cool, but I'd hate it if they gave up the fact, that he's a model, because I love everything about that. But yeah, I agree with what you guys said about the match. I just like that at one point Tyler looks like a young Kerry Ewells. Who doesn't love Kerry Ewells?
That's my talking point, and you're just stealing it right now.
I know. I know. Also, though, the referee looked like a young Ken Berry from F Troop. So just throw them both together. But yeah, V, that was for you.
All right. Kerry Ewells.
You could have mentioned Mama's Family with Ken Berry.
He didn't look like Mama's Family Ken Berry with the gray hair. He looked like F-Troop Ken Berry with the Wrangler James.
Or Mayberry RFD Ken Berry.
Oh, yeah. Mayberry. Yeah, yes. Okay, I'll give you that.
Okay. Y'all are showing your age. Let's go to a break. All right. You're listening to The Place to Be Nation. When we come back, we are going to look at the top two matches on the card and talk a little bit about Dusty Rhodes and his sons.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes and PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out Scott Criscillo and me on The Mothership, The Place to Be Podcast, home of great interviews, and our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you, including Main Event, which features a roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, including immediate feedback and discussion for WWE, NXT, Ring of Honor, and New Japan Super Shows. Also, be sure to to relive wrestling's past with Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast, Phil Schneider's Digging in the Crates, and our monthly pay-per-view rewind roundtable series led by Ben Morse, and join Pro Wrestling Only's Will and I on the Dangerous Alliance podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. Sports fans have plenty to enjoy as well. We feature the Sports Evolution Mega Show with Scott, Dr. G, Cowboy, and Cowboy Sr., the Kings of Sport, led by Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, as well as the NBA Team Podcast, which takes a year-round deep dive into pro hoops, and the TJ McClune Show, featuring great guests from around the world of sports journalism. PTBN also proudly features the Richard the Mailman Podcast, specializing in the world of TV, thought leadership, anger, and irreverence. As mentioned, all these shows available on PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN also is a home to tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island and Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keith's RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net.
Do you watch pro wrestling? Do you love pro wrestling? We do too. And there's only one podcast feed that you can't miss.
PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network. That's the Pro Wrestling Only, Place to Be Nation, Podcast Network.
We have a host of brilliant shows dedicated to wrestling past and present.
Whether it's the territories, Japan, Lucha, old school or new school, we've got something for you.
Get a dose of history on Exile on Bad Street with Chris Elner.
Listen to reviews of current pay-per-views on the PTBN reaction shows. Not just WWE, but New Japan, Ring of Honor, and NXT. And get your weekly update on everything else that's going on in the indies, Lucha, and beyond on This Week in Wrestling.
Relive WCW Supercards on Where the Big Boys Play with Parv and Chad.
Join Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave on one of the very best shows for super hardcore nerds wrestling culture.
Go deep into WWF history and discover the Bob Backlund and Bruno Sammartino eras on Titans of Wrestling.
Don't miss the Pro Wrestling Super Show with Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston.
You can get the full archive of Goodwill Wrestling with Good Old Will from Texas.
There's Tag Teams back again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze.
Then there's the only pro wrestling game show, Brainbuster, with me, Johnny Sorrow, and a panel of great guests every time.
Get them all on one feed.
PWO-PTBN Podcast Network.
You know you want to hear it.
Okay, welcome back to the NXT TakeOver Reaction Show for TakeOver Respect. And our next match, the finals of the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic. And we have Finn Balor and Samoa Joe versus Rhino and Baron Corbin. And Chris Z, what did you think about these finals, man?
Out of the three matches in the tournament on this show, this was the least. And I think a lot had to do with the crowd. Wasn't into it as much at the beginning as, you know, they were in the first couple matches. Cause he's got, I mean, everybody already been out there once. It was a quick turnaround. They're right back out there again in an hour. So, I think that may have something to do with it. It was interesting that the Dusty Rhodes Classic Finals, you know, the guy that was, you know, in charge of NXT, whatever, FCW as well, featured one man who was training NXT, and it was Baron Corbin. So I thought that was interesting. But regarding the match, it was fine. I mean, Balor, he was shaky in his selling in this. You know, trying to remember to sell the leg at times. And then, of course, you had the finish where he just did the whole diving stomp again and won. And I thought the finish was kind of anticlimactic and flat. And maybe it was because I was expecting Joe to attack him or something, because everybody was taking a turn and it didn't happen. So I was like, okay, let's see what happens now. And then they had the ceremony afterwards. And once I saw the Rhodes women in the ring, at first I was hoping, okay, I hope Cody and Dustin lay these guys out. But then I saw the Rhodes women in there, so there's no way in hell they're going to do anything. and they didn't. They played it completely straight. Cody did a good job, you know, in talking. And that was it. It was a feel-good moment. So I guess they played it safe there. Didn't want to run a big angle with it, honoring Dusty. So
yeah, we'll talk about the celebration at the end. We'll talk about that separately.
It was what it was.
Yeah. Sorrow, the match itself.
I really enjoyed the match. I agree. Like, it felt like, you know, virtually, wow, we were so hot from those first two. But I just attribute it to thinking, well, these are teams that are tired. They've been through that. The announcers put that over, you know, that they're tired from, you know, the previous matches. And so it all makes sense from a dramatic standpoint. And I just really enjoyed the match. I thought that with the selling of the leg thing, was at first trying to do a thing where, like, he was shaking it off and he was doing okay with it, but as soon as someone attacked it, boom, it was fucked up, and he sold it for the rest of the match. As much as people in wrestling sell, like, everything, you know, still doing drop kicks and what have you, but always grabbing the knee after that. And I thought Joe still looked more, at points, looked more fired up than I've seen him in a long time. This is his second match in a night. I totally enjoyed it. I was thinking also about the possible turn, and I like that they didn't do it.
What about you, Pete?
Well, we missed that we had Funaki in the crowd.
Oh, yes, so, yes.
So they must have had an NXT drug test or something.
It looked like Taco Bell Makai.
Yeah, of course, next to Tommy. I love the stereotyping of all Asians hang together. It was okay. It just felt a little flat. Finn, it's never been his strength, his selling. It's always been hard-hitting offense and with a couple neat dives. It wasn't about him emoting to the crowd. It's never been his thing. And I think he got a little exposed here. He did much better than he normally does, though. So I'll give him props that it looks like he's trying to grasp it a little bit instead of just shaking it off. But yeah, it just felt flat. And after the other two matches were so much more hotter and more entertaining than this one, it just felt anticlimactic.
Johnny P.
Yeah, I'm kind of, a little bit of an echo chamber here. The Balor selling was a little spotty. There's nothing really wrong with the match. I respected everything they tried to do, from the pace to what I thought the storytelling was. It was good. You know, if I had to go star ratings, I'd go like 3, but it was the least of what I saw tonight it was the least of tonight for me. I was shocked by not having a turn either way, and I also echo Chris, it was great. At least it saved us from Corbin and Rhino winning. I wanted to see that. I'm hoping tomorrow the Rhodes brothers attack somebody and there's a match there or something. I will say, final point, that I think Cody has, whenever he gets hurt or if he retires early, because the WWE just won't let go of the authority figure thing, Cody is going to be have a second life being some sort of WWE official with a microphone on a television show.
Oh, he's great in that role. He is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's move on to the celebration at the end with the Cody Rhodes speech. Johnny Sorrow, you're a guy, at least you post this all the time, that you cry at every single emotional moment in wrestling. You let the tear ducts flow.
I do.
I know you do. So, did you cry during this moment too?
I got that, you know, like chopping onions misty thing, most definitely. Like I mentioned earlier, that trophy is so fucking cool. I love they had it up on the stage and all the tags walked by it and gave it respect. And it has a crystal version of Dusty's boots inside it. The same boots pretty much that were identical to that cover of that Pro Wrestling Illustrated Win Dusty's boots that they had, which was the first PWI I bought with my own money. And that was a crystal version of those boots, and that made me a little choked up, because normally these trophies look like shit. And it's like, wow, there's some thought to this. And I didn't even consider that the Rhodes brothers were going to attack the winners. And God bless you guys for thinking that, because I'm like, well, that is wrestling. It would not have even occurred to me that I was told that this is a serious situation. God damn it.
I think that would have been so awesome. I think that would have been like the angle of the year.
You know what? I agree with you, because I would have legitimately been shocked, because I was completely in. Okay, now we're in no more kayfabe land. This is the real part, especially with that great speech, and with Dustin not talking and just like circling around in the back. That does all make sense. I had no idea.
And then
would happen.
And then he snaps, "Finn, get your sweaty ass arm off my mother!" And then
get off my stepmom.
The Rhodes women being in the ring—that was the killer on that one.
They had Eddie's mother in the ring once, pretending to have a heart attack.
That's the Guerreros.
That's true.
All right, Pete, anything else you want to say about this before we move on?
I want to say, one, the Rhodes family is a very pretty family. And two, the boots also, another cool thing about the boots is you can also look at it for more symbolization in the sense that, you know, when wrestlers retire, it's the boots that are always there. So you see those as part of the trophy as the end of his career.
I think you just created a new word.
Symbolism?
Symbolization.
Symbolization. Oh, yeah. I meant symbolism. It's getting late, man. Give me a break. So I think you could look at it like that, which is also how I'm going to look at it. I think it's kind of classy.
All right. And what about you, Chris?
I've said what I said. I'm good.
All right, good. Well, let's move on to the main event. Okay. And Pete, Sasha Banks versus Bayley for the NXT Women's title. For me personally, I wasn't as enamored with this match as I was with the Brooklyn match. Still thought it was really great. Don't get me wrong. I wouldn't call this a match of the year contender like the other one, but I still enjoyed the hell out of it. I don't know if they used the 30 minutes as wise as they could have, but I think I need to rewatch the match, but it didn't feel like a match of the year to me. I mean, maybe you have a different take. I don't know. What'd you think?
No, I don't. I enjoyed it. It at first it didn't have the raw emotion. At first, well, it was weird. Right when they started out, it had the emotion, and then it lost me for a few minutes. Then it sucked me back in, and then they started telling the story of working the back, and then there's like the payback spots from the previous match going after the hand, and the work on the finish was tremendous. But there was just some execution flaws in it.
I thought there wasn't a unifying theme throughout the match.
Yeah, it seemed like they're bouncing around a lot, especially for the first 15 minutes or so. It felt like it got more focused down the final 15. But the first 15, it seemed like they were, you know, bouncing around. One of the examples, and then some of the stuff just wasn't clean, like when the boss went for her Hurricane Rana or her Franken Toyota. When Bayley went for the Frankie Toyota, it looked like the boss was supposed to land on her feet, but she didn't. Just so some little things like that was a little clunky, but nothing that hurt the match or anything. But, I mean, it was still an excellent match, and it still had the drama and the impact on me as a storytelling, but it didn't have, what had the previous match, which was the focus limb work and just the lead up was just much better on the TV. Here was still good, but it just wasn't as crisp and still a good match. I gave it like 4 stars, 4.25. It just was just like step below what they did last time.
Johnny P.
Yeah, I'll say I'm a card carrying like emo guy. I watched this for the art of it and emotional involvement. So they had me there. It's the third best women's match this year that NXT put out in my mind, which is not faint praise at all. And this is a still really cool match. It wasn't quite at the level of August. But then again, that was in a pretty major arena. So that had like kind of the crowd and the atmosphere fueling it, which would have helped for a fan like me. I thought that they had some cool limb work in this, although it wasn't nearly as focused. I think 30 minutes is just a hair too much. I think especially for these women, your sweet spot, which most matches are, if you want to do something that feels like dramatic, epic, and tells a story, 22 to 26 minutes. But honestly, this thing, I actually scooted to the edge of my seat, like that cliche, with about 2 minutes to go, and became self-aware that I did it. And by the end of the match, I was so emotionally involved in this thing, man. I don't know what it is. Like, I thought that this division would really fall apart by midsummer when they moved some of the women up, but they kept Sasha around, and this was also really cool. I like what they do. This is my wrestling, the NXT product, and this was a cool main event. It lived up to it. It wasn't the greatest match of the year, but still really good.
Chris Z.
This is interesting. Okay. This is a match where you definitely have to watch the first match to get this match. That's one thing you definitely have to do. If you watch this as a standalone match without that first match, then you won't get it. Second off, I think that everything around the match was way better than the first match, but the in-ring of the first match was way better than this match. I think if you would have put those together, you would have probably a 5-star match. Sasha Banks was phenomenal here as a heel. So awesome. The stuff with Izzy, making Izzy cry like she did. Izzy's Bayley super fan. taking off her little headband and wearing in the ring and pretending to be her while Izzy is crying her eyes out in her daddy's arms. That is old school pro wrestling there. That is fucking awesome. And, oh man, just great stuff. And Bayley was really good at playing her role. Pete brought up the clunkiness. Yes, there was quite a bit of clunkiness in this match. But, I mean, they were working their asses off, and I think they may have been trying too hard at times, which that can cause that type of stuff to happen. The Iron Man stipulation hurt the match, I think. I think if they just would have went out there and had a 30-minute match, that it would have been probably way better. Yeah, and the finish run was fucking awesome. The manipulation, I mean, Bayley went Zack Sabre Jr., at the end there, working over the fingers of Sasha as she had in the Bayley law. I mean, that was fucking awesome. That was Tim Thatcher. That was Grapple Fuck. You saw Grapple Fuck on NXT, folks. So be proud of that.
Well, we've seen Grapple Fuck before on NXT. It's been good Grapple Fuck
with two hot chicks. Yeah,
not the manipulation. Like, I mean, Bayley was like going full Brit there. So that was awesome. The end stuff with the flowers was great. And what people didn't see. Well, Sasha gave her flowers to Izzy and hugged her to let her know, hey, this is all part of the show.
Oh, no. Boo. Yeah,
she did.
Boo.
She did.
That sucks.
She did. So that happened because the picture's on Twitter of her giving the flowers to Izzy and Izzy.
Well, that plays into my fantasy booking. So,
but the thing is, I mean, that's the way they are, though. Hell, they've already done it, you know, with the Four Horsewomen after the last match, and they're hugging each other and raising. That's just what they do. They said, okay, this match is part of the show. Match is over. Now we're in, you know, real life land.
God, I hate that shit.
Well,
what? It sucks.
I know, but that's the way they're doing it, you know. And
same thing of working a cut. It's not going to happen nowadays, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
But it's not on camera, though. I want to be the one who sticks up for this. I think that's a cool thing as long as it's not on television. Why are you going to ruin the girl's night?
No, that's not what I'm saying. It sucks. I'm saying the real life camera bullshit. You know what I mean? Like, because somebody mentioned that with the celebration in the Cody Rhodes speech that, okay, this was the fake stuff, and now this is the real stuff. This, and you know, well, oh, I don't want to see that on my TV, that this is the real stuff, but this is the fake.
No. Well, see, here's the thing. With the network, with all these documentaries now, with all these 24s, okay, baby, shut the hell on those specials.
I know.
I mean, look at your Table for Three that I haven't watched yet, but they got with Cesaro, Owens, and Ambrose.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're just shooting the shit like they're all great old friends and stuff. Cesaro's calling Ambrose Mox. I mean, they're talking about Ring of Honor and all this. And, you know, if you remember that we just had on Raw, I mean, Cesaro and Kevin Owens were having, you know, some hellacious type matches. So, I mean, they're doing this type of stuff on the network. So, yeah, it's totally right now.
That I don't mind, Chris. That I actually don't mind. You know what I mean? I'm saying, but like in the actual show itself.
Yeah, but if it's not on TV, it don't matter. So.
And no, it was on TV.
No. What they're describing right there.
The flowers was not on television.
No, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the
Four Horsemen celebration.
Yeah.
Oh, that.
The curtain call.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They like, explain
it. Or like Josh P. brought up with the celebration with Cody Rhodes, like, oh, this is real life. This is really Cody talking, not TV Cody. You know what I mean?
Is he supposed to be Stardust during that?
No. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying, though, is that I don't like the separation during the show of one's real, one's fake. You know what I mean? I don't mind if you do it after the show. I don't mind if you do it on a special. I don't mind if you do it in a documentary or on an interview.
Will doesn't want to see the boom mic, and I'm with him. Yeah.
Well, I'm trying to remember.
That's a great analogy, Pete.
Well, it's not an Ed Wood movie. I'm trying to. When during the Cody speech did it go, this is all fake?
I don't know. Ask Johnny P. He's the one who brought it up.
Well, what he said.
You're putting words in my mouth there, man. I just said that he had a future in a talk
by the show, and you're the one who brought up the talking point. I'm at your talking point.
I don't think you did.
You're adding on, yeah, but that's like if I propose a bill in Congress and you just say, and also I want to club seals and throw it on my bill.
Okay, Place to Be Nation, at the end of the show, I'm going to tag on the part where Johnny said that this is the real stuff and this is the fake stuff, and I'm paraphrasing that somewhere, all right? After the little song blurb, we're going to just clip that on just to make sure everybody knows what I'm talking about.
But the thing, the finish, though, the way they executed it, where the tapping out ended like 2 seconds before the time limit ran out, when everybody and their mother was on Twitter thinking that was going overtime because they took that extra 30 minutes on, and it ended at what, like 10 after 10? So it went 10 minutes
over.
Then it was like a 10-minute celebration, yeah.
Yeah, so they between that and the turn, everybody was working tonight, folks. So, yep. Good job for them. Good job for time.
I didn't know they were supposed to turn one of those guys, Balor.
Oh, that's been talked about for weeks, that it was that Balor and Joe were going to be feuding for the title. And in fact, that was going to be the main
event. So that's happening. That absolutely happened.
I've only read people speculating that seems to be where they're going.
They just assume Balor needs an opponent to work with, especially when they're doing house shows. Doing it with Baron Corbin ain't going to cut it.
Doing it with Tyler Breeze, well.
I don't think so. I no one believes in Breeze winning the title.
House shows. You're talking about house shows. Going to a town is entertaining. That's what house shows are nowadays.
No, that's not even true. Most house shows have the feud, the number one feud going right now, which would be Cena Rollins is going all over the horn.
It's not the one that's headlining the house show I'm going to in a month.
Well, yeah, you're getting the B show, Johnny.
with Seth Rollins.
Cena's on vacation.
Yeah, and the feud's over now after this cage match, I assume.
The house show I'm going to is headlined by the champion, Seth Rollins. So, okay. Anyway, my thoughts on this match.
Oh, Bayley's sure. Oh, yeah. I was avoiding that, by the way.
Bailey's cape was fantastic. When she opened it up, she's in like full superhero garb now because she's the champion, and it plays into her character. New gear, super heroine, And when she opens up that cape, the belt is revealed too. I thought that
Well, they mentioned what the deal with that was. She's wearing Iron Man colors because of the Iron Man match.
Oh, okay. I didn't catch that. That's awesome. Yeah.
No, I marked out for the color schemes too. And then Sasha was wearing the colors she wore when she first debuted.
Oh, I didn't know that. I did think there was a robotic look to some of the stuff on Bailey's gear. I didn't catch that. That's awesome. Now, I was surprised none of you mentioned that Becky, was it Lita?
Lita, Becky, Charlotte, and Stephanie.
And Charlotte and Stephanie are at ringside, and at one point the crowd's chanting women's wrestling. This was before the match, and Stephanie's chanting it with them. And I know there's going to be a ton of people, like, bitching about this.
Oh, they already have. Don't worry about it. It's already
okay, okay. But here's how I took it. You know, when you're working at a job, and you all want to go out somewhere, and the boss wants to go along with you and have a good time at the local bar at happy hour with you that one time, and they're sincere, but you don't really want to be out partying with the boss. That's what that looked like to me.
I agree with you.
That's exactly. And they mentioned this was only the 10th Iron Man match in WWE history. Is that true, Chris?
I have no idea. It sounded a little low.
I thought so, too. It said it was the 10th Iron Man match in WWE
history. Not the 10th match to go Broadway, but actually advertised as an Iron
Man. As Iron Man.
Angle Benoit, you had Brett and HBK. Shaw. You had Rock and Triple H. What else is there?
Orton Cena. Yeah, that doesn't sound low at all, man, because I can't think of the other ones.
It just seemed amazingly low to me.
Brett, you could go Brett Ric Flair from Boston. That's a house show.
Speaking of Izzy.
Owen and Brett did a house show, Iron Man.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even know if those counted because I just thought it was still very low.
I'm guessing for 10. I mean, and we have 5.
Yeah, you know? That's
we have some pretty, pretty smart guys here when it comes to wrestling.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think he was talking about everybody but you, Johnny.
Please. Come on. Don't be ridiculous. I wanted the Izzy heel turn. God damn it. I want to see at some point her go over to hug Izzy. She slaps her. Sasha beats her up, and that little girl gets in the ring and puts on a kid-sized version of Sasha glasses and poses with her and walks away. That's what I want to see. The crying was all phony.
Yeah, I don't think that's ever going to happen. I do like the idea.
Hey,
I love that idea, too.
Of course you do, because you went to Philadelphia Wrestling like I did, sir. Of course you do.
Of course, a turn that makes no sense. That would make perfect Philadelphia sense.
Sammy's kid. Makes perfect sense. You know, because Bailey is now hugging all the kids. What about me? I was the original kid. And you're sharing your love with all the kids now? Fuck you. I'm going with the boss. That's perfect.
Well, Sasha's done NXT, so you.
I know. It's my. I don't fantasy book often, but it's my.
I don't say this often, Johnny, but I like it. I'm with you.
Thank you.
All right. So anyway, this is interesting because we all know it's a thumbs up show. There's no point in going around saying thumbs up show. Let's pose a different question. I'm going to go with you first, Johnny P. Best NXT special we've seen. Yes or no?
It's weird to me because, that's an interesting question. Like, my gut says no, but maybe this is the most consistent. You know, and maybe that, you know, if you add it all up, it would be then. You know what I mean? Like, I can't deny that that's in play, even though I didn't really think of it that way. I don't know, but damn, yeah, there are a lot of cool moments.
Because they've always had a fun undercard. I don't think they've ever had a better undercard. And then we still got a four-star type-ish main event. And
yeah,
like,
that's
we've
exactly
seen some
where I would put
in events before.
Agreed. Agreed, yeah. It's definitely top three, and then you can whittle down and debate from there. I'll leave it to the other guy.
All right, well, let's go to Pete. What do you think?
I'm with the most consistent, and I think all these specials, they've never been bad. They've all been like almost like carbon copies in a way. This is the only one that felt kind of different because the undercard was so strong underneath, as in having like consistent three-star matches up and down the whole entire card. The semi-main was only, I didn't give 3 stars. I gave that like 2.5 to the finals. And the other one was like the domination of, I didn't rate that just because that was just more of a, like a, showcase. But all the other matches were like at least 3 stars or higher. So I think this is the most consistent undercard. But the other matches, shows would give you like 2 4-star matches. Like last one we had that incredible women's match, and then we got a kick-ass ladders match. So it's kind of how you, what you value. I'll take a card where I find nothing bad. I find everything really good. So I could argue. I could see someone saying this is their favorite NXT. I don't know. I think all of them are so samey on how it's built. This felt different. So I'll actually say, yeah, this probably was my favorite.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's my favorite, and it's like this. When we look back on like old cards that we want to go back and watch, the most popular ones, I think, tend to be the ones that are really good from top to bottom, if not great from top to bottom, and not the ones that only have like 2 or 3 matches at the top that are awesome and everything else stinks. The ones we remember fondly are the ones where everything was awesome. And that's what this falls into. So that's why it's my favorite one.
And one other thing, let me go back to real quick. Also, this show, it kind of closed the chapter on Sasha Banks, who was such an important character this last year for NXT. And kind of like, you know, starts the new Bayley, the future of Bayley, along with everyone else. You saw, like, we saw Gable on Jordan had a star-making performance. Even the mechanics had a Dawson and Wilder even had a, where you want to see them more. So everything that they delivered on each match, you want to see more of something in a way. And so I thought they delivered in where you want to see where the story goes. So I think they did a great job closing up the book on one chapter and then opening up plenty of other chapters so you can go down that road and be wowed and stuff.
Chris?
I'm going to put a second behind the Brooklyn show, mainly because the Brooklyn show was spectacle. It was in the huge building. That crowd was insane. You had the grandiose ring entrances. You had a lot of other stuff going on. Plus, the Bayley-Sasha match was better on that show. And the Balor-Owens match, which doesn't get talked about nearly enough, that ladder match was off. So I'm going to put that at number one. This one knows behind it. And the main reason is because of that great undercard. You know, this, as Johnny P said, this is the most consistent show they've done, and that's 100% true. I mean, it was a really strong show up and down. So it may not have had the theatrics of the Brooklyn show, but I mean, it had everything else. And I hope that now we're going to start seeing some more people get, you know, spotlighted like we saw tonight with Gable and Jordan and Dash and Dawson. So yeah, I'm definitely intrigued at what happens at the TV tapings tomorrow night. So we'll say what's up.
Didn't this kind of feel like when you see one of those clashes, Clash of the Champions, where you're like, boy, that was an amazing 2 hours?
Well, one thing that we haven't mentioned is who was there backstage that was talked about on Twitter all day. And
I had no idea someone was backstage. Who is it, Chris?
James Storm is in talks to become a wrestler / coach for NXT. Huh?
And Bill Russell of NXT.
He went in, he was shown entering the building with Billy Gunn, and he was tweeting out all these interesting tweets tonight before the show. like $9.99. He tweeted once, and he was pimping Susan Komen and all this other stuff. So he was doing company line type stuff. But but yeah, it was, and it was in the Observer that dropped as the show was going on that he was in heavy talks with him. So I wouldn't be shocked to see him debut tomorrow night.
Okay, well, I was expecting a bigger name. I didn't, you know.
No, I like that idea. It's what Rhino's doing, too. I like the idea of having guys who are there who realize that it's not some sort of demotion in your career to be there as the old guy.
You know,
perfect role.
Old territory wrestling.
I kind of wish that they would do the same on the main roster, too. You know what I mean? In the sense of, like, okay, we can't afford to give Ryback a loss. We can't afford to give Kevin Owens a loss. Well, let's feed them people that the fans will know that can do some shtick, maybe get in a
spots. they got a guy like that called Mark Henry at this point.
Yeah.
He's the only one, though.
Justice.
Yeah, but yeah, that's the only one that WWE does it to. Like,
he's the only one. I mean, he's pretty much the only one.
Even when RVD was on a temporary schedule, they were putting him over freaking Cesaro, right out loud. I mean, it's just brutal.
I agree. So, hopefully, you know, with the debut of Asuka, with, you know, the Dana Brooke showing some fire, Bailey's still going to stick around. Hopefully the women won't completely disappear, you know, from NXT, or the quality matches won't disappear. Guys, I want to thank all of y'all for being here. Next reaction show, I think, is the Hell in the Cell. Anything else coming up before that reaction-wise, Chris?
Unless you guys are watching New Japan, the King of Pro Wrestling show.
I guess we'll watch it. I don't know. Johnny P, are we watching it?
I don't know. We'll talk off air. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll talk. But anyway, guys.
It's a possibility.
Guys, thanks for joining me on a Wednesday. Chris has to get some shut-eye. For the rest of us, I want to thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you again at Hell in the Cell. Bye-bye.